Hey there, it's JVL. On The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today, we talked about abortion and the Republican Party and the pro-life movement and also O.J. Simpson and what his legacy is and what that was all like at the time. Here's the show. David essentially says is, I've been a pro-lifer my entire adult life, and I have all sorts of pro-choice friends who had said to me, you don't understand, this is the pro-life movement only cares about controlling women. None of this stuff is about personhood or human dignity or what. And Dave was like, no, you don't understand. It's really about life. And now he's saying, crap, maybe it was actually about that stuff all along. Because of the actions of the pro-life movement since Dobbs. Because the pro-life movement's response to Dobbs was not to pass a whole bunch of social safety net spending to make life easier on women and stuff like that. It was to do things like criminalize driving through your county on your way to an abortion, as a few Texas counties have done. The Alabama Supreme Court trying to criminalize IVF. That has been the pro-life movement's response. And it's something I've been thinking about a lot too. And I just thought it would be interesting for us to talk about it. What are your thoughts, Sarah?
I'm much more interested in your thoughts on this than mine. We have talked about abortion in the past. And I'll just say, like, in terms of who I am on this issue, I always considered myself, especially when I was younger, pro-life. And as I got older, I increasingly became much squishier. And the second you become squishy on it, you become sort of pro-choice. Even though that's not, I wouldn't sort of have defined myself, especially as a young conservative, let's say in my 20s. But one of the things that struck me, and like now, actually, after having had kids, I am more pro-choice than I was before, in large part just because you see how complicated all of it is and how important it is that the relationship really be between a woman and her doctor or parents and the doctor. And they are making choices that are deeply hard in many of these cases, and that impact the mother's health. And I just, I do get now very frustrated with seeing like a bunch of men on TV being like, well, this is how this should go, you know? And I think, especially like there's been some of these back and forths in Congress where you can see that the men who are talking about this, who are making laws about it, literally have no idea how a women's reproductive system works. And so, I am at the zenith of my pro-choiceness at this point. But I'll say about the David piece, one of the things that resonated with me was the fact that he was talking about how he knew all of these pro-life advocates who were incredibly good faith in their advocacy. And they were consistent in terms of, if you believe that life is life and life begins at conception, then that carries through to a frozen embryo, right? That's just the logical extension of having principles, and that he was surrounded by people with principles. That to me resonated for me as a sort of like, I used to really defend the Republican Party against charges of racism, mm-hmm. You know, because I didn't know any racist Republicans. Right? Like the people that I knew.
You didn't realize that you knew any racist Republicans.
Or whatever. Yeah. Say. But it's the difference between, you know, when you're like, oh, well, I know this, like, this group of people and they are this way. And I presume the entire party and or the entire, you know, conservative apparatus is this way. And that is wrong often, because what happens is these become divorced from the advocacy side and the people who are deeply committed to it, it just becomes another tribal pose, right? Just like another thing that you do, where it's like, I'm on this team and this is what this team believes. Like for me, I remember
all my friends at AEI believe in small government. So conservatives must really believe in small government too.
That's right.
Right.
And the thing that David points out where it's sort of like when the rubber meets the road on the politics of it, you see where people's like genuine principles are. And his point that Trump has no principles, which we knew, but also that the entire movement was willing to trade those principles for power. And it's just, it's like every other issue, right? It's not singular to the pro-life movement. It's just what the Republican Party did in general on debts and deficit, on
foreign policy, right?
Even on like entitlement states. Like it is very unpopular to say you're going to do something about Medicare and Social Security. And as a result, Republicans are now running from doing something
about trade.
Medicare. Yeah, all of it. It was through that lens that I thought David's piece, I mean, David's always right. I mean, David writes very few things that I disagree with, even though I would say I disagree with David to some degree on the merits of this. But this is why I was mostly interested in your take, because you have talked a lot on this podcast and in general about this hypocrisy that you've seen out of the pro-life movement. And I think people maybe don't even understand, like they're always like, you, when they say we have Trump derangement syndrome, what they don't understand about why we're so torqued up is A, because of the threat that we see, but also because we were of this world. And so the betrayal feels to watch everybody be like, oh no, I had no principles. Oh no, I didn't care. I felt this way on the gay stuff, where it was like, took people in good faith about how they believed in marriage and whatever, and only to have it turn out that they wanted just me not to have a family. But if Donald Trump gets to have three wives, cool, no big, right? He wants to pay for abortions. He wants to, you know, pal around with Matt Gaetz, who sleeps with 17-year-old. Like, there is no sense of sexual morality that these people have, despite the fact that they've tried to foist it on the rest of us for a long time. That is very...
It's purely about power, right?
But, I mean, sorry,
they would
but
be
I
want happy
to know what
to...
you believe. Do you agree with David on the merits that all life begins at conception?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this is why, you know, abortion was always one part of it, right? There's the death penalty stuff. There's the just war stuff. There's the, you know, the Catholic social doctrine about how you got to, you know who's very vulnerable in a capitalist society? Children and pregnant women, right? Incredibly vulnerable to the system around them. And the system has a duty to protect them and help them and keep them from being victimized by like the big maw of capitalism, which only sees people's worth as workers. Workers of the world unite. You like how commie I'm getting here? But this, as you say, the story of the pro-life movement is exactly the same. It's just the same story as the conservative movement and the same story as the Republican Party over the last 7 years. There's no difference at all, right? It is a bunch of people being asked to be being said, we'll give you power so long as you go along with this. And I'm saying, great. Yes, that's all I want is power. And what that power is to be used for is then negotiable. It's totally divorced from the ideological underpinnings, though, of the movement. And that's what makes it authoritarian, right? When your pursuit of power is wedded to the pursuit of power and not to an ideological project, and that's where you get authoritarianism. And that's what this looks like to me. And again, you see it in the COVID stuff. You see it, the response of Republicans to COVID, the response of Republicans to the child tax credit that was in the American Rescue Plan and their attempt to kill it. You know, Biden has unbelievably masterfully resurrected a light version of the child tax credit. He got it past the House, which was amazing. And Republicans in the Senate are trying to kill it. It is impossible. It seems to me to be impossible to take at face value the pro-life incorporated or Republican argument that they care so much about life when they have so little interest in helping families. I don't understand it. And I don't think it can be understood, because I think it really is all about controlling women, right? I mean, you could draft the policy responses to a post-Dobbs world if the pro-life movement had meant what it said, right? You would have had very careful legislation with, you know, it would have taken a long time for the legislation to pass, because even in red states, because it would have been very carefully constructed with, you know, deep understandings about the differences between like elective abortions and DNC procedures resulting from miscarriages, right? You would have seen all sorts of stuff. Instead, it was people rushing out of the gate to just pass, just, you know, early as possible. Can we get to 6 weeks? With zero regard for anything else, and with no protections for mothers, no help for people. And this is, you know, pro-lifers don't want to hear this. Number of abortions in America has gone up for the first time in like 30 years.
Yeah.
And I, you know, this is why I was always dubious of the idea that, like, you have to, if you really care about abortion, then you have to vote for Republicans, because the truth is the number of abortions has been receding since the 80s under, since the 90s under both Democratic and Republican presidents. And if you just plot the line graph, the rate of recession on the abortions is a little bit faster under Democrats. I think that's tied to economics and not to, you know, policies, but whatever. And now we have more abortions and nobody cares, right? Nobody in the pro-life side cares about this. They think it's all great.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When I was more pro-life, the argument for me that I sort of made as a teenager in my like history classes or whatever, we're talking about this, was one of personal responsibility, which is, I would say, sort of the most basic thing that I got early from Republicans that I sort of liked philosophically, was the idea that, like, we should not be protected from the consequences of our actions, or like that you shouldn't use abortion as birth control. Like, you are making a choice to have. Now, of course, I was doing this as a teenager who was not yet sexually active and like didn't have to engage. And you know, there's so much about how complicated all of these things are that I didn't understand back then. But part of what's interesting to me is how you never hear about personal responsibility anymore as an argument. Like, nobody's even interested in.
Oh yeah, you do. It's all about immigration, right? These people come to America, they should have done it the right way. Republicans are very selective in deploying their up by your bootstraps personal responsibility anymore.
Do they say? I don't hear people talk. I don't philosophically. I mean, I hear people say they should come the right way, but the idea of personal responsibility, that you're responsible for your own actions. I don't feel like I hear that from Republicans much anymore.
People on welfare, they gotta be people in the inner city doing drugs, personal responsibility. People out in rural America doing fentanyl, they're victimized by big pharma. Right? This is literally true.
Yeah, although I sort of feel like you making that argument, you have to go back in time a little bit to get there. I just don't think anybody's that interested in personal responsibility anymore. I think everybody's a victim and there's always grievance sort of everywhere. I don't think Republicans talk about it or even have it as a value.
You talked about it and you heard it from people in your focus groups when the Republican side, we were talking about the child tax credits. And remember, your Republican groups hated the child tax credit. Because it was like, you know, why are we helping these people out? And they're, you know, we're paying people in the inner city to have babies. Do you remember that?
I think you're projecting a little bit of what that was. I don't remember that. I remember people thinking that, like, it should be means tested. I remember there being people being like, I'm getting this tax credit and I shouldn't be getting it. And it's like a waste of government money. We could go back. We could go back to the tape. Yeah. But here's the point. Whatever. My only thing is that, like, as a value, as a central value or tenet of conservatism, I feel like I don't hear Republican elected officials talk about personal responsibility very much anymore, like as a theory of who we are and how our laws should be structured. The main thing, though, that as I got older, I have seen with like, and this is where I think Tim talked about this a little bit with the Biden ad that they're running, is like, I just have so many friends, and including our own experience, both who have, well, A, used IVF, but B, had like all these various complications. And also things where like, you know, you often don't know you're pregnant at 6 weeks. Yeah. The ad that the Biden team chose is about a woman who very much wants to have children, which again, IVF is about very much wanting to have children. And who can't because she couldn't be treated. Like the unintended consequences of her not being able to be treated when her baby was essentially, you know, going to be stillborn, when she was having a miscarriage, is that she got a bunch of infections and then now can't have kids. And to your point, like, that's not pro-life. And it's interesting when you say it's about controlling women. Sometimes I wonder, is it about controlling women or is it about not caring about women? Because like the scary thing about them not treating her because of the law is to me just that is about being like your life is disposable. Like we take your health less seriously. If men got pregnant, if men experienced half of what women do just from a medical standpoint because they have a uterus, the amount of focus that it would get, women bear the brunt of all of this and they sort of have to do it alone, right? It like happens to them. And I think the disregard for that is really, as an adult now, I think it's gross and it's like terrifying. There's like a personal experience I want to talk about, but I'm not going to do it, I guess, because I didn't get permission to do it. But
yeah, don't.
I will just say, there's a moment when stuff is going wrong and when it occurs to you that somehow you could not get treated in some regard, like how terrifying that is. And I think this is why it's such a bad issue for Republicans, is even for people who are pro-life, more people today want just like, I don't want like laws passed that make it impossible for people to get the treatment that they need, which is where I think this, like, and so when they, it's just like not, it's like the Republicans, it's the power part is to me about taking up this issue as a tribal issue without really understanding it, because you don't care what happens to women. You don't care how their healthcare is impacted. For you, it's just a way to get elected and demagogue. That's what makes me angry.
That's possible. That's the less pernicious view, I guess. That's better than having a deep desire to control women. It is interesting that...
Is it to just not care about women?
I think that's probably...
Just to value them less?
That's less bad than needing to dominate and control them. Probably.
I don't know. Maybe. They're both pretty bad. I'm not like sure I can put those on a scale.
you look at survey data on this, and the pro-life position is less popular now than it has been in 25 years.
Yeah.
And has been on a decline since the 2010s. That decline accelerated in 2016 and accelerated again after Dobbs. And you have a moment where we have the most anti-abortion legal regime in American history at the same time that access to abortion is more popular than it has been in three decades, which is an interesting disconnect that I wonder what it means. There's another aspect of this, which is, so we say that Pro-Life Incorporated has shown their hypocrisy. I talked a little bit about this last night on the live stream. It's really mostly hypocrisy about Trump. Now, we'll see if it spreads to hypocrisy everywhere. My sense, and I could be wrong, this is me sort of guessing the near-term future, is that Pro-Life Incorporated will be totally happy to go after and try to bitch slap any normal Republican who deserts them on abortion law. If you are a representative from the 7th District of Ohio, they'll come after you. It's just Trump.
You know,
that's
an interesting idea. I'm thinking about the practical cases, though, where it applies. So take Arizona.
Carrie Lake. Right.
This is Carrie Lake. Okay. So Carrie Lake has been very vocally for going back to this, 1500s law or whatever.
She was for it before she was against it.
And she's against it now. And I don't know that she will pay a price for it either, because as best I can tell, Republicans are very aware of the electoral weight around their ankles that this poses. And from a Senate, winning the Senate, Trump winning in Arizona, it's funny listening to Trump. When you hear Trump talk about right now, he's like, the governor there, they're going to get this taken care of. The governor's a Democrat. If you think, Donald Trump, that the Democrats are going to bail you guys out on this bad policy, you are crazy. No way. This is going to be on the ballot, literally on the ballot, not figuratively abortions on the ballot. Abortion will literally be on the ballot. And I don't think that Republicans are going to, I think they will try to bail out Carrie Lake the same way they'll try to bail out Trump, because it's too electorally important, and they're going to look for ways. Like, I think they're right now that they are putting the hard squeeze on the Republican legislature there in the state. It is the majority Republican, to see if they can't get a law passed that would preclude the ballot initiative, because that's the best case scenario for them. And that's what Trump wants anyway. So I'm just not sure. But here's the other thing. The question I have is, if you're Mike Pence, or you are one of these social conservatives, or even not even a super social conservative, who wants to have a reason to go after Trump, you and I talk in the main, Trump pays no electoral price for having no principles on this issue, because it turns out most voters in the Republican Party, it's just a tribal, yeah, box check. It's not real in terms of their level of commitment. And I mean, I don't know, I was doing a two-time Trump voting group the other day. Every single one identified as pro-choice. And so part of it too is Trump realigned the party. Like, a bunch of the people he brought in are social moderates. We talk about this a lot. Trump coding as a social moderate. But I do wonder, and maybe do you know this? Mike Pence is out there beating up on Trump for this. Lindsey Graham even deigned to disagree with him over this. People for whom this has been a long-held opinion. Do any evangelicals sit it out over this? Do they have any pool with any small segment of true believers? No.
No. And let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Because to do that makes you anti-Trump, and all of their people have rabbit ears for anti-Trumpism. And so you give up your base, whether it's your membership or your donors or your ability to raise money or something like that. You can't be on the wrong side of Trump because it's a cult. I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean descriptively. Mm-hmm. Because there is no world in which there are 70-year-old Fox-watching people who love Donald Trump and are going to vote for him and send him money, who will also then send money to you, Reverend Cletus Lovejoy, who is pro-life and wants to stop abortion and who isn't supporting Donald Trump. That's just not going to happen, right? They are going to look at you, Reverend Cletus Lovejoy, as a, you're just a rhino, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, God knows, I know that Mike Pence, has no real constituency. Yeah, he's getting a gentleman 6% there as he was running for president. Donald Trump oftentimes wins the I get to have it both ways contest, right? Like, no one expects him to be ideologically pure on anything, because no one thinks he has fixed principles. I guess I just wonder if this is one issue where he gets a little bit in the sour spot with voters, where because this is on the ballot and because the Democrats are doing what I think they had to do, which is prosecute a case against Trump. You can't just let it be like you think abortion's going to do all the work for you. You got to prosecute a case against him. But there, Trump did it. Advertising, you're going to spend a lot of money on this. As Trump tries to triangulate, does he get himself into a thing where he's trying to have it both ways and instead everyone thinks he's doing it wrong?
Yeah. So I don't think people think he's doing it wrong, but I do think the problem is when Trump says you got to leave it to the states, A, there will be swing state voters who don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, who agree with it, but like who get a little bit squirrely and think he won't do it. But then B, who look at what's going on in the states and think, shit, we can't let that happen in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Right. So you can be a two-time Trump voter or a Trump to Biden voter in Pennsylvania who look at this, and when Trump says leave it to the states, you think, well, crap, we can't have this in Pennsylvania because this is where I live. Yeah. All right. Anything else here? Or do you want to talk about Orenthal, James?
Let's do some quick OJ. We were talking about this on Casey's show this morning, and it got my juices flowing.
I want to hear it. Go.
So here's the thought I had. As I was reflecting on OJ, I was like, you know, he was an early sort of Trumpian figure.
Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.